Hello and welcome to The Appetite, a podcast brought to you by Opal Food and Body Wisdom. I'm Kara Bazzi, a licensed marriage and family therapist and co-founder and clinical director of Opal. If you're new to The Appetite, welcome. And if you've already have us on your listen list, you will likely know that we have taken a hiatus from recording. And we're excited to be back, refocusing our episode content on the areas we live and breathe at Opal, namely health at every size, RODBT, and exercise and sport. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing the co-founders of Wildwood Running, Marie Davis Markham and Robin McGillis. These women are both long-distance running coaches in the Portland, Oregon area who have come together to change the landscape of the sport of distance running through the mission of Wildwood, to guide, empower, connect with, and educate young female distance runners and coaches that impact young female runners. I love their work, and I'm inspired by their creativity of how they are using their coaching platforms and relationships with experts in the community to change sport culture. Okay, enough of me. Robin and Marie, why don't you share the story of how Wildwood came into existence?
Okay. First of all, it's great to be here. Marie and I are super excited to share a little bit of our story and talk to you. So Wildwood started just over 2 years ago now. It was just our two-year anniversary in January. And like you said, we're both coaches in the area, in the Portland, Oregon area. Marie coaches at Lincoln High School and I coach at Central Catholic. And I've been there at Central High School for 9 years. And in that time, have been to several coaching clinics. It's just kind of something you do. You go to a clinic, you learn about different methodologies, different training philosophies, and some are local, some we travel to. And we were at a coach's clinic that we go to annually in Boulder, Colorado. And it was a great clinic, really great, kind of the X's and O's, we say, like as far as like what sort of workouts you should be doing at what time of year, content. But when Marie and somebody asked a question to some of the presenters about how do you make adjustments for your female runners that, you know, may be going through puberty, hitting a plateau? Like, how do you manage that alongside of the training plan? And all of them answered the question, but it just left us feeling like there could be more there. Like, it wasn't quite enough. You know, we thought there's got to be, we know there's more information out there on how to better support female runners as they go through these fluctuations. And we just felt like, from the answers that we got, these coaches, as well as Marie and I as coaches, could add to our toolkits to better support, empower these girls so that, one, they could ride the wave through these fluctuations and we could have more girls staying in sport longer in their career, because we just typically see a drop off junior, senior year where girls feel discouraged. They're going through these changes and their times may slow down a little bit. They're not sure what's going on and they feel, you know, alone, not empowered, not having that information. So that's kind of where Wildwood was born. We that late night after that clinic, we were chatting and we thought, could we bring experts together to kind of bring more information, not only for us as coaches, but to our peers in the way of mental health, confidence, nutrition, relationship with food, those sorts of things. And then just some of the basic nuts and bolts of understanding puberty, Red S, running on your period, those pieces that we wanted to learn, and then we could bring that to other coaches. So that's kind of where the idea of the mission of Wildwood was kind of born at one of those clinics.
Would you add anything, Marie, to that?
No, I mean, I think the only thing I would add is that Robin and I had been there, right? We were young runners ourselves, mm-hmm. and whether through our own experiences or our peers or our teammates, like, we know what it's like being a female distance runner, especially in high school. And this, like, there were no conversations that I ever had at that age. And I feel like, and Robin was the same. So we were like, let's start this. There are people doing really great work. How can we bring that together?
Yeah. And I feel curious about how you identified what those gaps were. Like, I know that now that I've been involved with Wildwood, I see sort of the theme of having a talk on team culture, having a talk on periods, having a talk on nutrition. So how did you all decide sort of what the gaps were in these clinics?
And you know, originally we started by surveying just the coaches we knew, right? What kind of information would you like to learn about young female distance runners, middle schoolers and high schoolers particularly. And we got a ton of feedback. And most of it were the topics that we kind of launch into, like you mentioned, over and over. And so we started there. And then as we started hosting clinics and workshops, the surveys after those really gave us information on what people's favorites were. We always ask, like, you know, which one did you learn the most from, whether it was it's a coaching clinic or an athlete clinic? And also, which one did you like enjoy or love the most? And usually that gives us a lot of information as to what we can continue working on. And then also with our own girls, right, on our teams, the information they're asking for year after year after year. And sometimes the same girl asking for the same information year after year really solidified what we thought was the most important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing I'd add to that, too, is I feel like we learned a lot as we started reaching out before our kind of inaugural event and started reaching out to practitioners. Marie and I will tell the story. I think we got on the phone with Maria Dalzot, who is a dietitian in the Seattle area. And we initially came to it thinking, we're going to talk about calories and what kind of foods girls need to eat to sustain, you know, to fuel themselves. That's where we were coming from. And Maria was like, well, actually, I don't really, that's not what I talk about. I talk about relationship with food, diet culture, intuitive eating. And it really opened up our eyes immediately to this whole other topic area that we had kind of, to be honest, hadn't really thought about. And it's been a huge, so I feel like we've learned from the girls, from the surveys of the coaches, but also from the practitioners that we've engaged with along the way that have really helped say, hey, this is what I'm like, even Kara, with you, what are you seeing in your practice? What are common themes that you're having to address? Because most likely those are the same themes that are going to be prevalent in the girls and the coaches that we're working with.
That's actually, I didn't realize that it was your conversation with Maria Dalzot initially that opened up both of your mm-hmm. ideas to what could be focused on when it came to relationship with food.
Yes.
I know Maria was the first dietitian that you brought in for your first clinic. Mm-hmm. And that was also the clinic I participated in as well. And I was so excited to see that she was who you brought in that was going to change the conversation around relationship with food. And that's something I really respect about what you're doing, because I think it's not what people are expecting to hear from a nutrition talk.
Yeah. And it was amazing to us. We were sitting in Robin's car talking to her on the phone, and she just kept saying things, and we're like, yes, yes.
That's
like,
it.
This is what we need to hear. This is exactly where we need to be, not knowing that that's where we were going to go. Right. And it opened our eyes in that moment, and it put something like an idea to our thoughts, but we didn't know that idea was out there. So it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's exciting. And I think it confirms the overlap between the work that Opal's doing and what you're trying to kind of bring into specifically into the sport world with these athletes and these coaches. So that's really,
well, you think about it too. And it's no different than like, or it should be no different in my mind. Like I work with a physical therapist and I talk to the PT about, you know, what are the dynamic exercises we're doing? What are we doing to prep our bodies to get ready for a workout? Right. And so I rely on that expert. It should be the same with confidence, with relationship to food. You should be reaching out to these experts and saying, okay, what should I be talking to my girls about? How should we be preparing them for life?
Yes. And there's a lot of experts in the field of nutrition that would approach it differently too, right? Like they would be focusing on the what, especially in sports nutrition. So again, I think it's really notable that within Wildwood Running, you're opening it up to a more countercultural ideas around it.
Well, and to be honest, that's all we've ever heard at any coaching clinic is what to eat, when to eat, how much to eat, percentage of how much you weigh, you know, whatever that is. And it's like overwhelming. And for two coaches who just want our girls and our guys to love the sport and have a great relationship with food, that felt like daunting, right? Like, I can't bring this back to my kids. Like, A, I don't understand it. So how are they going to understand it? And so getting messaging or information, I should say, from Opal and people like Maria just feels empowering. It feels like we're reaching people in a new way, which feels great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool. And what have you noticed about in terms of how coaches in particular are kind of receiving this, or what feedback are you getting or observations are you making around as you've been doing this work and holding now, this is going to be what, your third, fourth clinic coming up? Fifth maybe?
And we did a bunch of little free Wildwood Wednesdays the first summer we started. So we've done like some bigger events and then some kind of little mini events.
But the feedback, I think the great thing is when we host a clinic or an event to give coaches and athletes something they can take in that moment, like something they can do tomorrow, right? Because that's what they want. But then there's that big piece of how can we challenge them to look at their whole approach at coaching? How can we challenge them to like think deeper? And I think that's what these conversations are doing. Like, hopefully they're walking away feeling a little confused and a little uncomfortable, so that when they maybe then go and find more information, maybe they come listen to your podcast, or maybe they read a book, or maybe they hire someone to come into their team. But ultimately, coaches, when we receive information back from them, they do feel challenged and kind of like, whoa, that was cool. And a lot of times they can't put words around it, but just kind of like, thank you for that, because I feel like that's information I needed and it will change my practice. And who knows if that challenge is uncomfortable for people and they push it away, but hopefully most of them decide to do something with it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the coaches come back too. And you see the same people coming back, which to me feels like, you know, even if some of our topic areas are similar and we have different clinicians or presenters, they're on their own path to discovering what's going to help them. And maybe they need to hear a conversation from Kara Bozzi three times before they're able to really figure out what that means for them.
Right. And that feels so true with what we see kind of on our side with treatment, and even working with family members or support system people in our clients' lives. If this is a whole reworking of some of these, of thinking about for relationship with food or relationship with exercise, that it takes a while to digest. Yeah. And even to have, like you said, language around it, or even know what questions to ask. A lot of it we talk about is seed planting. We're doing a lot of seed planting that then people can kind of mull something over. But it's so encouraging to hear that the coaches, that you're even, yeah, you're getting repeats.
Yeah.
And even the girls are coming back. So they're coming, I mean, you see a lot of the same names over and over and over with similar, like I said, similar topics. So they're still wanting this information. And when we hosted our first summer camp, we were talking to someone who gave us advice, like, you can have the same presentation, you can have the same speakers, you can do the same thing year after year after year, because these girls are evolving, right? Their lens is different. Maybe they're hearing something about navigating their period prior to having their period. And then maybe the next year they get their period. And so now it makes more sense to them. So the lens that people are listening to this is always going to be different, even if it's information they've heard before.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Yep. The one other piece I'd just add to that, you may have said this, Marie, so forgive me if I'm repeating, but I think the other thing, in addition to the information that I feel like we do a good job at, and we've evolved as we've gone, is the space to reflect and to talk. So even if it's a similar content, these girls love coming into groups, whether it's over Zoom or in person, to have discussions, because it just feels, I think, therapeutic to them.
One thing I've noticed, I have a ninth grade girl and a seventh grade girl, and just even through like school and health classes and places where, for example, something like nutrition or puberty might be talked about, they're not given a lot of space for conversation there to talk about it in this way or in a different way. They are given more kind of the traditional information, but without sort of the exploration questions. And so I just appreciate that too, that you're providing spaces to have community and conversation and learn from each other. For the girls and the coaches, I did join Marie and Robin in San Francisco recently for a clinic. And I just was really struck by how amazing it is for coaches to learn from each other and have that community my husband is a coach, and I kept thinking I wished he was there to have that experience of just sharing even ideas and sharing practices and and learning from each other, and just seeing the spirit of learning was so obvious of how much open-mindedness there is and desire for growth.
Yeah, we've talked about that in the world of running, and it's one sport that really lends to sharing ideas and trying to enhance each other, because, you know, the relationship between coach and athlete is unique, right? But you can do all these amazing workouts. Robin and I could be doing the same workouts, but get such different results based upon, you know, how we cultivate our team around that. So one thing that we do love about this community is the willingness to share and want to learn from each other. And that feels really empowering. And I feel so proud to be a part of a group of people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a spirit of like withholding or being competitive or like, I don't want someone to know this for my own success. Like, it didn't feel, yeah, there's a lot of generosity that's extended. Yeah. And it's interesting too, I think, like what you focus on in your clinics, like in some ways there's still so much change to be, you know, realized in the sport world, especially there's so much incidence of eating disorders and body shaming and disordered eating. And I think on the recent kind of information coming out from the University of Oregon in their track program, and I think more people are vocalizing what's happening and asking and advocating for change. So on the one hand, there's still a long ways to go, but I think what you're offering with Wildwood just offers a lot of hope in having something that's being offered of how to make change, not just identify the problem, but what can we do with that problem and how can we grow and learn and change practices. So I just, yeah, it's really hopeful. When you think of as coaches particularly, what do you see, how do you both see your role in the changing of the sport culture? And like, where do you see kind of your particular niche, I guess, in that?
Okay, you go.
I'm an assistant coach at Lincoln. And so I feel like my biggest role within our team itself is supporting our head coach. And in that regard, our relationship needs to like really be in tune and our philosophy the same. But in specifically, I work a lot with the girls and having those conversations and providing them information and then also empowerment. So when they walk away from our program, I feel pretty confident, hopefully, that their trajectory is going to be really great. But also knowing that, kind of like what you were talking about, the University of Oregon, knowing that they're probably going to be the ones who ask questions or bring up red flags or wonder, why are we doing this? And I think that that's also the same with Wildwood. I hope that girls have enough information that if something feels off, something feels inappropriate, something doesn't feel good for them with their body and how they view their body or in any regards, that they're going to then ask a question or turn to a peer and say, does this feel right to you? Or ask a coach or reach out to their parents. Because, I mean, we can talk about programs like the University of Oregon and what was happening there and say, oh, shame on you. But if we don't have people speaking up before it gets to that point, how are we actually going to change the culture of running? So if our girls have that information and that knowledge, then I think that that's the step to changing, or one step to changing the culture in our sport.
Yeah. I think I would articulate what I do. I feel like to some extent, like what I do as a coach, just to put things in place to support my team where they feel like they have a strong community, they take care of each other, they feel safe, they feel driven by other things external to just times, places, and championships. So I try to create that sort of environment on my team, or help the girls create that, empowered them to create that environment. You know, I, as head coach, like I've said this to other folks, but you know, I love what Marie does with the girls talk. And I've kind of took it for granted that I'm a female head coach, that the girls could just come and talk to me about these things, but I had to be more intentional in creating a space for those conversations. But as a head coach, it's difficult. I mean, I wear a lot of hats and I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I know it's an important piece. So I was lucky this year to have an athlete who took on the girls talks for me. She said, Robin, I want to do it, because she was inspired by Marie. And she said, I sent this girl Olive to one of Marie's sessions to learn how to do girls talk, and her and I collaborate, but she's in charge of it. So I think just, you know, and then I think it's even, my philosophy is if it comes from the girls, that the likelihood of it being super meaningful is even greater, right? Because it's them bringing it to their peers. So I try to, behind the scenes, pull strings where I can to like kind of help create. So that, you know, the best I can do is try to role model the behavior that we're asking our other coaches to do. And I always say, I don't have all the answers, you know, but I want the best for my girls. And what is the best for my girls? And I, you know, I have a daughter like you do, Kara, and Marie has a daughter. I mean, you have kids. And I think when you have kids, not that you have to have kids, but when you do have a kid, I think it gives an extra sense of like, I'm creating this not just for all the girls I coach, but for my kid. I want an environment where she feels empowered, where she feels confident. And that's totally an extra motivator for me.
And I know, Robin, you're mentioning girls talks, and our listeners might not know what that is. So Marie, you could explain what a girls talk is.
Yeah. That'd be great. So a girls talk is basically coming together, bringing the team together. It doesn't necessarily have to be track or running or cross country, but bringing the girls together with their coach or some sort of leader. It could be an athlete like Robin uses with her team, Olive. But really just talking around critical topics that are important to your team, whether it's team culture kind of things, whether it's navigating puberty, red S, having periods, maybe some nutrition talk, anything that you feel is really critical. But we're so used to coaches talking to their athletes, giving this information and then walking away. And girls really need and want that time to process. And so girls talk is really set up, you know, I've been a teacher for 19 years. So it's really set up with a strategic kind of plan that allows them to have conversations around the topic. And my belief is if they're vulnerable, they're going to get to know each other, love each other, accept each other, understand where each other have been. And that's going to create such a bond. I think girls really need that vulnerability to connect, where maybe, don't want to be stereotypical, but maybe guys don't need it as much as girls. And so just giving them this 30 to 40 minutes just to talk. And within the conversation, I try and ask questions to kind of gear them in certain directions where I want them to go without feeling like I want them to say certain things. And then in that regard, they just get to connect around a topic that's really important to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so great. And I feel like that is just such a neat practice within any sport, right?
Yeah.
Outside of even running, of having an opportunity for kids to talk. I know I did a version of it when I was coaching fifth grade basketball for my daughter. We did a 3-minute chat at water break.
That's awesome.
That adaptable version.
Yeah. And Robin and I have talked about bringing our teams together because we're like, maybe that would create a whole new dynamic, right? And you get some girls who will never say a word, but they're listening. And when they're listening, they're the ones that come to you later and they're like, hey, actually, you know, I haven't had my period for 3 months, or I'm worried about this. And so it just opens up this like new avenue for them to come to you, this new way of talking that feels pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's so cool. And when another thing I just love about the two of you and what you're doing with Wildwood is there's simultaneous, like a blending of it all. So it's not like, I mean, you're both competitor. We're all, the three of us all competed in college athletics. So we're competitors too. We're, you know, it's not like you're putting that fully out the door, but the investment in the whole athlete and the person and creating team culture and seeing how that all marries together to create a positive experience and create an experience where people want to stick with a sport for a lifetime is just remarkable. And you're getting to witness that. You're getting to see that play out through the way that you are, the way that you practice as a coach. And I think sometimes people, I don't know, it seems like sometimes coaches think there's kind of a choice between one or the other. And I think I love how you demonstrate that they can go hand in hand. And I think it would be interesting for you to just share like a couple things about a couple culture building practices that you have, because again, I think that extends outside of distance running and for coaches of all sports. Yeah, just what are some of the things that you have found or that you've heard from other coaches or things that have been helpful in building connection and building community?
I'll start. Let's see. From a culture standpoint, so I guess the main thing or one of the main things is I always tell the girls at the beginning of the season that this is their team. This isn't my team. So we have like a leadership group, either captains or leadership group, depending on the needs of the team. But they're put in place at the beginning of the summer, usually at the end of the track season. And they amongst themselves kind of come up with how they're going to divvy out the roles based on what we think the team needs support with. But they help facilitate like the goal setting session that we do. So we do goal setting as a team and as individuals, but it's important to me that when we set up that goal setting time, I'll be there for a few minutes, but then I leave and I let them lead the session as leaders and bring the girls together, and they brainstorm and then they come up with like kind of their operating norms. You know, some of them are bigger goals, but most of them are like process type goals. But again, I think that practice of empowering the girls is sort of indicative of how I like to try to lead the team and to create that culture. Going to the competitive side, this was like I had shared this during my presentation in San Francisco, and it's something I stole from another borrowed from another coach. Coaches at Aloha High School here in Portland, Ken Martinez. He does this thing called beads, where they give out beads. So they you have somebody at the 2 mile mark capturing the place of every teammate. And then you look at where they finish and you get awarded beads for how many people you pass in the last mile. After each race that we do this at, we say, okay, Sally earned 4 beads, you earned 6 beads. So everybody has the opportunity, no matter where they are. It's actually easier when you're back of the packer because you can pass more people in a cross country race to earn something. And then at the end of the season, we do a bead party. And I buy all these beads from Michaels and we make bracelets. And so it's just a way of kind of reinforcing the competitive side, but doing it in a fun way that touches everybody on the team, not just the top 7.
I love that.
At Lincoln, I think one of the biggest things that help with the culture of our team is that, you know, when we're at practice, we're really focused on running. But when we're not doing our running or our workouts or whatever, like when we're with the kids in other ways, we don't talk about running. Like we want to know them as people, as individuals. We want to get to know their whole identity, not just them as runners. And that's definitely led by our head coach, Eric Detman, in terms of like, let's get to know you in other ways. And I think that's super powerful because I think that they feel like, you know, these coaches love us as people as much as, or maybe even more than as runners. And so I think that's a great culture building thing. I think our girls talks help a lot as well. We also go to camp in the summer for about 4 days, which I think is a great team building event. And a lot of it's just like, what are we going to do next? But a lot of it's planned as well. And the kids usually, you know, they connect with their friends, but then they also reach out more and really connect with kids that maybe they don't know as well, new kids on the team. And then I think the biggest thing that creates culture is the coaches and the coach relationship with the athlete. And so making sure that you have coaches on your staff who are truly there for the right reasons. They're there for the development of the athlete, the relationship building. They're not just there for that huge paycheck we get. But they're really there because they want to support an athlete. They're not there for their own ego. And that's one thing I feel really lucky with at Lincoln is that we have coaches in place who have that same desire and that same love, but we're all very different. So kids connect to me differently than they connect to someone else. They have someone that they can find that they like connect to. And it's amazing to see like the day before a race, who they all gravitate towards, right? And to know that all of them have someone they can reach, I think is incredibly powerful and also is a great culture builder.
Mm-hmm. What do you, I had an actual assistant coach approach me at a couple of years, or maybe like last year, and didn't know how to, there was a lot of interest in sport culture and making some changes within the team, but she didn't have the support of her head coach. Yeah. And I'm curious if you have any advice, either of you would have any advice in that situation where someone sees a change that they need to make, but they're not getting the support either of their head coach or maybe the athletic director. And how, what advice would you give?
I mean, because I'm also an assistant coach. So people have approached me with that way. And I've just said, like, if you don't have the same philosophy as your head coach and your head coach isn't changing, then you're not in the right spot. And that sounds kind of brutal, but if that coach isn't willing to change and they're not going to value the awesome things that you bring, find somewhere that is. Mm-hmm. Because if you do have these great ideas and these shifts in culture and these ways to build relationships, then you should be honored in that and find someone who wants to take that on and not take it on, but wants to embrace it. I don't know. It's kind of harsh, but that's what I think. I don't know about you, Robin.
And how would you know when you'd bump up against a limit with a head coach? Like, what if maybe the head coach's practices are a little off, but then how would, like, is there, if as you're trying, I mean, to suss that out, what advice would you
give? I think it's based on, like, really your intuition, like your gut, right? Like how you're feeling. I mean, you can't just give up. You have to ask, you have to have conversations. It can't be just like, oh, I'm done. Like, it definitely needs to be thought out and talked about, and maybe even said, hey, like, if we're not going to come to a place, then I might step away because this might not be the right program for me. But it shouldn't be just like a little thing here or there. Like Eric and I, like, some things we disagree on, but that makes our relationship a lot stronger, right? Because we can hear each other out and learn from each other. But I know that everything I do, we have the same philosophy, right? So I don't know that line, but I do think you have to work at it first before you decide to shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say for me, like, I have core principles that I use as sort of my compass. So community, hard work ethic, and fun are my three. And those have guided me as far as developing my program and my philosophy as a coach. I was only an assistant coach for a year before I came into the head coaching role. But that first year when I was an assistant coach, I did not agree with a lot of what was going on in the program, which was hard for me. But I took it as an opportunity because it was my first year. So I'm like, I'm just here to learn, just soak things in and process and go from there. But definitely having, like Marie said, having those things that you believe in, your core principles or how your philosophy around coaching, and then being able to discuss, well, this is what you would like to have happen or what you see might be helpful to the team. You know, maybe there's some sort of middle ground that can, you know, you can make inroads, baby steps. So you kind of give it that effort. And then if it's not working, ultimately you may have to go somewhere else. But I'm just lucky that it worked out the way it did in my role.
Yeah, totally. And I'm thinking about the athlete too. So for our listeners that might be athletes or in high school athletes, what advice would you give an athlete who is maybe can't change schools, is in a particular school, and doesn't have an amazing coach like the two of you, or maybe they are really actively doing things that are harmful or hurtful in their coaching practices. I know that, you know, that was my experience in high school of having coaches that really did a lot of disservice to me as an athlete. And so, yeah, what advice for our listeners that are athletes would you offer?
I have a couple of things that kind of come to mind. The first thing is what's, we saw this happen in the Midwest. We have this Midwest Wildwood running group. So it was kind of cool because, and all these girls have good coaches. I'm not judging their actual coaches, but they're from small teams and they wanted more of a bigger team feel. And they thought, why can't we all get together, do runs where we, you know, long runs together, do fun activities together. So in the short term, girls may not be able to find exactly what they need as far as community, but maybe they can find pieces of what they need in other ways that needing a coach to do it, to be honest. You know, can you do, you know, fun activities on the side with your team? Can you read a book together? Can you get those pieces to kind of fill some of those holes on your own? I would say, I feel like it's a little bit of a different thing to tackle when we talk about coaches that are doing a disservice to if there's some actionable things that are happening. I mean, me as a parent, if I would if I saw, I would march into that school and I would hoot and holler. I'd be like this. So if I were a girl, and I know it can be difficult, right? Because you don't want to be the girl that causes a ruckus or have the parent that does that, but it's for your own happiness, right? You want to have so sometimes you have to go up the chain to have your voice heard. If your voice isn't going to be strong enough, you need support of others around you. And that may be an athletic director, a parent, or a principal. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that, Robin. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about, changing the sport, right? Giving girls a voice to make changes. And maybe it starts with an honest conversation with the coach, like, hey, what you're saying doesn't feel good. Your messaging is harmful. Using words that kind of talk around that is probably really important. And then if there's no change, then yeah, I think that you need to make actionable steps. Because you're right, Robin, like, we want them to feel happy, loved, cared for. Like, yeah, sport is about doing your best, maybe even winning, but really it's about just continuing to grow and become confident. And if that's being pushed down, then what is sport, right? And so I think it's important that we try and support the coaches and like, hey, I would love to see this change. And then if that doesn't happen, I think you need to go to different levels, higher up.
Yeah, because you would do it with a teacher, right? If you had a teacher that was inappropriate in the classroom, you'd say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I know we're getting probably close to time. Is there anything that we're missing here, that anything that we haven't covered in this conversation that you feel like it's important to say?
I feel like we've covered a lot of great topics. I mean, we could put in a little unselfish plug for some of our events coming up.
Yes. Okay. I want you to do that. I would love for you to put in a plug. I actually don't know when this will be released.
Right.
You know, this episode will be released, but I would love for you to put in plugs for what you're just all the great.
Well,
doing.
Probably, I'm assuming may not get released for this, but we have our virtual camp that's coming up the last two weekends of February. So that might be a little tight timeline for that. But if it happens, great. It's definitely, it's an event where it was super well received when we did it last year. We had over 300 girls attend, some great speakers, and we have kind of a similar lineup this year. So we're really excited about that for the last two weekends in February. But longer term, we have our girls camp, which I think is going to be another fun event. So that's going to be the last week in June. We're planning to go live with registration by the end of February. So folks should look to that, but that's kind of a week on the trails. Girls stay in cabins. We have camp counselors. We do a lot of fun Wildwood type activities with reflection and girls talks. We have some running involved because we're at a running camp, but the running is that we meet every runner at their level. So we have things that are adjusted based on. So we have girls that have never run before or that are completely new runners to girls that are winning the state meet type of runners. It's really spans the spectrum as far as ability level. So we really encourage all the girls to come and participate.
Sweet. And then maybe we'll link your website.
Yeah. All
in the show notes.
Linked on there. So any upcoming events they can find on there.
Yeah. And I know that you are both very creative, innovative women. So you are continuing to think about and brainstorm ways of bringing this to the public. I love it.
And we value your opinion. You gave us great advice.
Yeah.
Francisco, just connecting with you and with Opal, it's been amazing.
I know. I love it. And as somebody whose daughter has now been twice to Wildwood clinics, she raves about it. So I think to the point too of if you're an athlete and you don't have some of this support within your own program, Wildwood is an amazing resource to connect with and sync up with to have that additional support and conversation. Well, thank you, Robin and Marie.
Yeah.
Glad we got to do this.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, you're welcome. If you are interested in Opal and you want to learn more, please visit us at www.opalfoodandbody.com. Thanks to David Bozzi for editing and Aaron Davison for the Appetite original music. See you next time.